you cannot really set aside emotions that are powerful in you. So if you don't set them aside and you actually confront them and you have the tools to confront them, then what's possible? And so we've discovered that actually you can make use of these emotions that you're not supposed to have, you know, and that you have anyway, and use them to be more effective in dealing with conflict. So that's been a kind of revelation and a stunning development in our work over the years.
The Center for Understanding and Conflict welcomes you to The Other Chair, a monthly podcast exploring the dynamics of conflict and how to bring the human issues to the table. Together with our guests, we explore how the power of understanding each other can lead to better solutions for people on both sides of an issue. We will also share tips for managing your own mediation practice, approaching conflict in the professional world, and ways to apply our understanding-based model in your personal life. Hello to our listeners, and welcome to The Other Chair. My name is James Dykeman. Today's guest is Norman Fisher, Zen Buddhist priest, founder and teacher at the Everyday Zen Foundation, and he is a longtime trainer and supporter of the understanding-based approach to mediation. Norman frequently leads conferences that integrate Buddhist contemplative practices in business, law, for caregivers of the dying, software engineers, and for mediators and conflict resolution specialists. Hello, Norman, and welcome to The Other Chair.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Yes, thank you for being here. I understand that your history with the Center for Understanding and Conflict goes back quite a few years. Could you tell me a little bit about how you got involved with the Center for Understanding and Conflict?
Well, I was a Zen priest at Green Gulch Farm Zen Center in Muir Beach, California. And it so happens that Gary Friedman, one of the founders of this center, lives in Muir Beach too, and he was a friend of the temple. So I don't even know when I met Gary. I've known him forever. You know, we go back many, many decades. But, you know, and I was always interested in his work because, you know, I'm committed to peace and harmony. So I was really interested that he was working toward that, taking on high conflict and conflict of various sorts and trying to bring peace to it. And in fact, he had been a consultant and a helper for us in the temple from time to time when we had issues. So anyway, we had an ongoing dialogue. And once he invited me to one of the trainings, and I attended the training, and I was really impressed with his method. Because as you probably know, his method, he and Jack Himmelstein, his co-founder and co-teacher for many years, their method involves all parties to the conflict being present in the room all the time. And that is pretty tough because it's typical in conflict resolution to do what they call caucusing. Put one party in one room and the other party in the other room, and the mediator goes back and forth so that the parties don't have to confront one another. But Gary and Jack always insisted on putting the parties in the same room, which is very tough and, you know, is very demanding on the mediator to be emotionally stable and emotionally astute. So I remember when I was aware of their method and its difference from other methods, I said, gee, you know, your method is really brilliant and effective, but the thing is, you need to be a very special kind of a person in order to pull that off. Not everybody can do that. So I said, so what do you do to train people to be that extraordinary person who can do this method, employ this method? And then they said, well, gee, you know, we train them in the method, but we don't really train them in being the person who can employ. And that's when we started talking about, well, could I help them train people to be the people who could employ the method? Because, you know, in Zen Buddhism, we practice very intensive and broad forms of meditation practice. And those practices, you know, are designed to make you be, you know, emotionally intelligent, emotionally resilient, and very empathetic. So they said, well, could we use the meditation and some of the concepts of Zen Buddhism to help us train people to be able to employ the method? And that's when we began to work together, and we've done work together in various iterations over many, many decades.
Could you talk a little bit more or in more detail about how your experience with Zen Buddhism has intersected and in some cases overlapped with the understanding-based method?
I think to make a long story short, let's put it this way, that in Zen and in Buddhism in general, there's a very thoroughgoing discussion of what they call in Buddhism afflictive emotions. Emotions like fear, envy, anger, hatred. All these emotions are recognized in the discourse of Buddhism as being typical human emotions that are probably unavoidable and that come from past conditioning. And in order to become an awakened person, a peaceful person, a kind person, one has to know how to confront those emotions and little by little transform them. Because the idea that we're not supposed to have them or that they don't exist is just folly. You know, that's not going to work out. You have to be honest about it. So the very rich, complex, and nuanced discussion of working with afflictive emotions is a central part of Buddhism. And it's a little bit astonishing, actually, to realize that 2,500 or 600 or 700 years ago, the Buddha in India was a pretty astute psychologist. I mean, these teachings are incredibly contemporary and skillful. And it's really quite stunning to think that so long ago, people had such a handle on this. But they did. And so it's that conversation about afflictive emotions and how to deal with them that is front and center in the work that we do. But the important point here is that afflictive emotions are very difficult to handle and to see clearly because they distort your point of view, right? When you're angry, you're obviously not in a position to think clearly and so on, you know? So the idea is that, and in Buddhism, this is very much the idea that through the practice of meditation and extending meditation into what they call mindfulness, awareness at all times, based on intensive meditation, you actually have the capacity handle on these things that are so very difficult to get a handle on. So the meditation practice is essential in the ability to be mindful of afflictive emotions and therefore not be pushed around by them, not be overly biased by them, and to be able to, and this is the most astonishing thing that we've discovered, is to be able to use your own afflictive emotions as cues and clues to how to overcome conflict, how to intervene to overcome conflict, rather than, I mean, the typical conflict resolution conventional wisdom is you're supposed to be a neutral, you're supposed to have an even tempered and even minded approach to all the parties in the conflict, so you don't have those emotions, or if you do have them, you just set them aside. And our conversation has to do with, well, actually, you know what? That's not really possible. You can say that, you can pretend to do that, but when it really comes down to it, you cannot really set aside emotions that are powerful in you. So if you don't set them aside and you actually confront them and you have the tools to confront them, then what's possible? And so we've discovered that actually you can make use of these emotions that you're not supposed to have, you know, and that you have anyway, and use them to be more effective in dealing with conflict. So that's been a kind of revelation and a stunning development in our work over the years.
Conflict manifests itself in many ways in our personal lives, for professionals in the workplace and for practitioners who have made a career bringing together parties in conflict through mediation practice. Each month, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts live webinars with featured guests discussing best practices and sharing their experiences for tackling conflict using the understanding-based model. You mentioned the advanced training programs that you work on with Gary Friedman. I believe those are the Inside Out training programs. Could you talk a little bit more about how you layer in the importance of this introspective approach and meditation in bringing about the self-awareness that makes one a better mediator or conflict resolution professional?
Yeah, well, Gary's terrific book, Inside Out, is his synthesis and summary of about 10 years of work that we had done before he wrote the book. So at the end of 10 years, he said, I think I have enough of a handle on how this works that I can start to write about it. So Inside Out is a pretty good text for understanding all that I'm telling you about here. I think Gary really explains it and discusses it really well in that book. But basically what we do in our advanced trainings is we have a set of what we call self-reflective techniques. And there are a number of them. And the idea is that, conflict is a very intense experience. And even when you are the neutral party and you're not in the conflict yourself, the conflict will affect you. And it will also evoke, likely within you, past experiences and past traumatic experiences, maybe of your own conflicts. And you will probably not be in a position to immediately recognize all this and understand it. So you need a process for having a respect for this and a kind of open-ended attitude about, let me explore it, not think that I understand it, but have tools to explore it and perhaps come to an understanding of it through the use of those tools. So the tools that we use most typically, there are many of them, but most typically in our trainings is we'll do a meditation practice. So I'll create a guided meditation that is geared to put people in a very open space so that they can observe what arises within them in response to the instructions that I'm giving in the meditation practice. So people will typically sit in silence and listen to my guided meditation, which will include a lot of space, a lot of silence for people to experience things without my, without my direction. So I'll put them in this, I'll say, basically turn toward this, and then I'll stop talking and I'll give them a chance to turn toward that and then this and this and this. And then after that, we will typically have some techniques for free journaling. So we'll have them write about the same issues that we've gone over in the meditation. We also will have them do interactive small discussion groups where they will try to get below the level of social conversation and access their feelings at a deeper level. And we found that through these three techniques, each one different from the other, you get a different angle. You learn something different. So in this way, people can explore what's going on with them in their own cases. So we often have people bring up, if we have a day-long training or even several days training, 4 or 5 day or more training, they'll be bringing in cases that they're working on now in their conflict resolution practice. And they'll be exploring them in depth and using these techniques of self-reflection to really see them at a much deeper level than they have seen them before. And often there's a lot of learning involved here that then will serve them for other cases that they have. So those are we do have other techniques too, but those are the three ones that we tend to, the three techniques, that is the guided meditation, the spontaneous writing exercises, and the dialogue exercises that we will use to explore the inner worlds of conflict.
You recently hosted a similar training with Gary Friedman around the principles of the Inside Out training with mediators in Ukraine. Could you explain more about what that experience was like for you?
I think it's a problem that many people have in the world where we are, in the privileged world, right? We live in the United States. We live pretty comfortably. We do what we can to be of service to the world. But, you read in the papers what goes on in the Ukraine, what goes on in Somalia, what goes on in, Guatemala, some of the countries of Latin America. And you're sitting here, as I am, on the California coast, thinking to yourself, gee, I wish I could do something to be of service. Yes, you can write a check, and we do that. But, it doesn't feel like very much. So we were quite thrilled that we had a chance to at least make some small contribution to people in Ukraine who are right there dealing with their countrymen and the problems that they have. So these are all very selfless mediators and conflict resolution people in Ukraine who were offering their services free of charge to citizens of Ukraine who were having various kinds of family issues and all kinds of conflict of various sorts. And so what we did with them was really our standard training. I mean, we didn't do anything different. But of course, it was very, I mean, we were so impressed with these people from Ukraine, the level of their empathy and their courage and their willingness to go deep with their own feelings and be honest about them. It was a really beautiful experience. And I think we felt really more privileged to learn from them and to hear from them than what we were giving them. It seems we got much more than we gave.
Many of the participants from Ukraine cited your guided meditation exercises as the most profound and compelling part of that experience and what they really took with them beyond the other mediation-related components of the training program. Could you explain a little bit about what those exercises were like and what about it would lead them to have such an experience?
Of course, I'm not sure why, from their point of view, I don't know exactly what they said or what their experience was. But what I would say is that our human experience has a lot of levels to it, right? I mean, we relate to each other. Say you go to a polite cocktail party somewhere and you meet people and you, where are you from and what do you do and this and that. So that's one kind of human interaction. And we could say that that's usually that kind of experience is not, it does not have tremendous depth to it. There are other human moments of human encounter that have a lot more depth and a lot more valence of reality to it, to them. And then there's, you know, going to the bottom of the human heart, you know, where we are living and dying and where really the circumstances of our lives cease to matter. And we're just with the sense of our being human beings together. And as human beings, you know, we share so much more than we differ about. In fact, the Russians and the Ukrainians share a tremendous amount. They're very similar peoples. Their cultures are completely interacted over many centuries and generations. So when you get down to the bottom of being human, you know, there's something very poignant about the fact that we all are born. We all live a short amount of time, really, when you come down to it, very short. And we all perish in exactly the same way. And so there's a different feeling about life, you know, when you get down to it at that level. And I think that when you practice guided meditation or any form of meditation, if it's serious enough, you begin to access that level of your humanity. And especially for people in Ukraine that are basically in an emergency situation, literally 24 hours a day, because during their waking hours, it's always an emergency. And then everybody being in an emergency together creates more emergencies because, you know, you interact with people whose situations are catastrophic. Maybe your situation is tenuous or catastrophic. And so the collective experience, you know, has got to be very jangling. And even when you sleep at night, right, these experiences are replayed in your sleep. So I think that my guess is that a lot of the people who were at that event with us online had not really had a moment where they could really drop down to this basic human level of we're living and dying together in the same way. And every breath and every moment of silence is profoundly impermanent and ineffable. I think they could feel that feeling that they probably had not been feeling since the war began. because there was no peace and quiet. There was no, you know, there was no moment to really access their deep human spirituality. So I think they felt a lot of relief, really, to drop down to that level that they had not been able to access probably for quite a while. And so if they experienced that, that's probably why.
Throughout the year, the Center for Understanding and Conflict hosts in-depth, basic, and advanced certificate programs designed to train you to become effective mediators and conflict resolution professionals centered in the understanding-based model. Our training programs have been the gold standard in alternative dispute resolution for 40 years and is popular within the legal community, with human resource professionals, ombudsmen, and corporate workplace mediation clients. For conflict resolution professionals and traditional mediators, incorporating Buddhist philosophy or some of these elements of spirituality that you mentioned may seem a bit unusual and difficult to approach. Could you talk a little bit more about how these practical elements are useful for mediators, no matter what sort of spiritual inclination they come from or what they're trying to get out of a program, if they're here specifically to become better conflict resolution professionals?
I think for the first thing to notice is the kind of uniqueness of Buddhism among the world's religions. On the one hand, you know, a religion is a religion. You know, we all have our impressions of what constitutes religion, and Buddhism is a religion like any other religion, you know. But what's different about it is that it starts from the premise that human beings suffer, and there's no escape from human suffering. We may not be in a war, let's hope we're not, or we may not be in a condition of want or deprivation, let's hope we're not, but even if everything is fine, there's plenty of human suffering. We don't get what we want, there's loss, there's disappointment, and ultimately there's death and the loss of everything that we value and know, and our own lives. So Buddhism doesn't start with here's God, believe, or here's doctrine, believe. It starts with this reflection. There is suffering, and it is built into being human. And human life, unless the suffering is addressed, will be difficult and maybe won't go well. So you should address suffering. So it's very practical. You know, that we don't care what you believe or don't believe. We don't care if you follow the Buddha, but let's talk about suffering and let's talk about the cause of suffering and let's talk about a method for reducing suffering and even ultimately ending suffering. And so that is very common sense stuff. You don't need to mention the word Buddha. You don't need to mention any Buddhist doctrines. Really, most Buddhist teaching really is very practical. It's really about suffering and ending suffering. It's about coping with afflictive emotions. It's about coping with things that actually will happen in the human life. And so because of that, it's much easier. I mean, I think that other traditions too probably have similar discourses. There are, after all, you know, like in the Hebrew Bible, there's proverbs, which are probably, you know, good advice for living, you know. So it's not that Buddhism has a cornered the market, you know, on good advice for living, but it's just that in Buddhism, that's where it starts, and that's the sort of the royal road of Buddhist thought is suffering and end of suffering. And so Buddhist techniques for coping with suffering and understanding suffering are very, very practical and have been from the beginning of Buddhism. So it's actually a very easy thing to apply those teachings outside of a strictly Buddhist context or even a religious context to practical everyday situations like conflict resolution. So this is, and in the modern world, in fact, this is very typical because, you know, I think the mindfulness movement, which is very powerful all over the world, I don't think there's a single culture or country anywhere in the world that is not aware of the mindfulness movement. And the mindfulness movement is a sort of a quasi psychological movement, absolutely based on Buddhist principles, these practical Buddhist principles of about suffering and ending suffering and working with afflictive emotion, that are completely secular and divorced from any kind of Buddhist context, but mostly couched in psychological terms. And so in that way, you could say that what I'm doing with the conflict resolution people is a species of mindfulness more than Buddhism per se or Zen per se. I don't refer to Buddhist teachings or Zen teachings in particular, other than in this practical way, in this way that comes from the mindfulness, sort of new mindfulness tradition, which is now an international tradition. So in that way, that is unique. I don't think, you know, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Zoroastrianism, or any of the other world's traditions haven't produced this sort of secular spin-off of mindfulness. And I think that's because Buddhism does have that unique characteristic as a religion.
This podcast is supported by our CUC Connect members, whose yearly membership includes free attendance to our live monthly webinars, 12 additional featured recordings of past training events, discounts to our basic and advanced training programs, and support from our network of certified trainers for continued professional development. Consider joining CUC Connect today and dive deeper into the understanding-based model. Final question that I have for you, and I really appreciate you being available today. I know you're very busy to speak with our listeners. Do you have any simple key mindfulness practices that conflict resolution and mediation professionals who are listening today could begin to implement or just take a moment to practice to start moving them on that path towards some of these more advanced concepts?
Yeah, the simplest practice that we teach, and it's completely available, and it's so simple and so effective that it might take you a minute to realize that, because you can't believe it's this easy, but it is. And this is the practice: simply take three conscious breaths. That means breathe in and be aware you're breathing in, and breathe out and be aware you're breathing out. And slow down enough to do this three times. Breathe in with awareness, breathe out with awareness, breathe in with awareness, breathe out with awareness, breathe in with awareness, and breathe out with awareness. And simply pay attention to the breath coming and going. Now, while this is going on, you'll probably notice there are other things going on too. You have a feeling in your body. Perhaps you're aware of a thought, a mood. Right now, as I'm talking to you, I'm aware of raindrops on the roof. All that is part of the experience of breathing. But somehow or other, the magic is that when you step back and step out of your train of thought, which is rolling along constantly, 24 hours a day, literally, when you step back from that for that three breaths, you have a different perspective. Something shifts. And so we recommend that our practitioners just do that. You can do that in the middle of the most heated conflict. Simply stop and pay attention to, you're breathing anyway, of course, all the time, but simply pay attention to three breaths, which will slow the breath down, which will change the train of thought, which will absolutely alter the situation you're in. So that's, people can do that. It's quite easy.
Norman Fisher has worked with the Center for Understanding and Conflict on programs such as Inside Out that focus on bringing the calmness and insight of meditation practice directly into conflict situations. Norman has written over 30 books, his latest being When You Greet Me, I Bow, Notes and Reflections from a Life in Zen, and Selected Poems, 1980 to 2013. Thank you to today's guest for being with us today and to our CUC Connect members whose support enables the Center for Understanding and Conflict to bring new perspectives in the field of conflict resolution and mediation to you, our listener, in each new episode. You can find out more about today's episode, along with full interviews and additional information about conflict resolution and mediation using the understanding-based model at www.understandinginconflict.org.